Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. Today, we're talking with Republican Travis Allen. He's a candidate for governor of California. He's currently an assemblyman from Huntington Beach and has experience in business. First half of our talk is really a look at Allen's plan for California. The second half, closer look at his life story, including how his mom got him interested in the profession in the first place. Stay tuned to the end of the podcast for a special discussion of the governor's race with USC's Dan Schnur. But first, here's Assemblyman Travis Allen.
Thank you for taking the time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, good to see you. So let's begin with the basic question. Why are you doing this? Why do you want to be governor of California?
So I was born and raised right here in California, and I've had to watch as my parents left the state, my brothers left the state, my best friend now lives in Texas, where he doubled the size of his house, doubled the size of his business, and pays no state income tax. I'm also an investment advisor. I've been in business since 2001, managing money since 1996. And I've watched as all of my clients have left. My clients started out in California. They're now in 22 different states around the nation because of Californians among the highest in the nation taxes, these out of control regulations, and all of the crazy laws that come out of Sacramento. So back in 2012, I said, you know, I've had enough. I can't go to Texas. I can't leave because there's no waves in Texas unless there's a hurricane. You know, I live in Huntington Beach, Surf City. I got to stay right here. But if I'm going to stay, I'm going to do everything I can to change the course of the state, to make the state once again the greatest state in the nation as it used to be. And I got elected to the state assembly. That was 6 years ago. I've done everything I can to turn the state around, to fight all of these bad policies of the California Democrats. But after 6 years, I've realized there's truly only one way to take the state back, and that's to be the next governor of the state of California, and that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Are you saying California's not the greatest state in the union?
You know, California used to be the greatest state in the nation. We used to have the best roads, the best schools, the best water infrastructure in the entire country. The problem is 39 of the last 40 years, the California Democrats have run the state legislature, and they've run us into the ground. You know, you take a look at California today, and one in five Californians lives below the poverty line. We have the nation's highest poverty rate and the nation's highest unsheltered homeless population. Right here in Los Angeles, homelessness is up by over 30% last year alone, and statewide, it's up over 13.7%. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, our schools are failing, our kids are 46th and 47th in reading and math, and every metric you look at, California has been failed by the policies of Jerry Brown and the California Democrats. And so, yes, we used to be the greatest state in the nation, and yes, we will be again, but we need a change in leadership to make sure that that happens.
Although Democrats would argue, Governor Brown would argue, that look at the turnaround in terms of he took the state from a giant deficit to now a surplus.
Well, he did that by taking more money out of our pockets as taxpayers. So when Jerry Brown was first elected, you might remember he was elected in 2010 on a simple campaign promise, no new taxes without voter approval. Well, he just broke that promise, you know, this last year with this massive gas tax, which none of us ever voted on. It's going to raise $52 billion in new taxes. And that really is just the last straw. Before this, he's raised taxes consistently. When he first got into office in 2010, the California General Fund was $86 billion. Today, the general fund is over $131 billion. That's an increase of $45 billion, over 50%, and that's our taxpayer money.
So let's talk about what it would look like if you won. Presumably, would still be Democrats in charge of the other two houses. What's priority one, and what are you going to be able to get done in that environment?
Job number one is very simple. It is to cut taxes in California. It starts with the repeal of this gas tax. None of us voted for the gas tax. Californians are overwhelmingly opposed to the gas tax. And we know that none of this money will be spent on any new free freeway lanes anywhere in the state. I mean, at best, they can only build toll lanes and, you know, bus lanes and bike lanes with this money. And really, only, you know, less than half of this money will ever find its way into California's roads. So the bottom line is Californians know that these taxes are not necessary. We could have done all of this infrastructure improvement without raising a dime of taxes, yet our taxes keep on going up year after year in California. So job number one is to cut taxes in California. We'll repeal the gas tax, and then as governor, through special elections, I will bring tax cuts directly before the California people, and I'll let the California people decide if they want to lower their taxes.
So how do you pay for infrastructure without tax increases?
So California has more money now than it ever has at any time in its history as a state. As a matter of fact, California is now raking in so much of our taxpayers' dollars that the governor doesn't even know what to do with it any longer. He's trying to put all this money into the rainy day fund, but the latest numbers just came out that California is going to have more money than it could even put into a rainy day fund. So it's going to have to decide what to do with all of this excess tax revenue. I think the answer is very simple. You return it back to taxpayers. But I will also tell you, when California's government workers are making 50% more than the private sector workers in California, there is a massive disparity here. When the California government is one of the largest industries in the state of California, there's a big problem. Because remember, the government doesn't create anything. The government just redistributes things back into society. We must build roads, we must build water infrastructure, we must fix our broken education system. But we can do that with the revenues that we already have. We just have to spend them a lot better.
So, and one of the big issues you've already brought up, the idea of housing, the price of housing in this state, and also homelessness, and those two things often do go hand in hand. How do you deal with that problem?
Well, they're separate problems, but they're interrelated. So California's homeless population is the largest in the nation. Homelessness nationwide is flat to even decreasing, but in California, it's up over 13.7%. And in cities like Los Angeles, it's up over 30% since last year alone. Now, if you want to see what a third world country looks like, go to downtown LA. This is the town of former mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. And look at the streets around 5th and Julian or 5th and Wall. And there's a 6-block radius that is just shocking. I mean, you don't feel safe walking down there. The streets are filthy. There's human waste. There's tents everywhere. And there's human misery. I mean, there are people that are being left out on the streets. And this is a crime. It's a crime to our homeless population. It's a crime to all the citizens of California. So what the solution is, it's very simple. California, it's simple, but it needs leadership to make sure that it's done. California needs to build a lot more housing. And this housing needs to be at all income levels, so anybody can afford to buy a home. Millennials today are stuck with their parents because they can't afford to move out. Many of the people that are homeless on the streets are homeless because they couldn't afford their house payment, and things spiraled out of control from there. So we need to reform CEQA, which is the legislation that is stopping a ton of building in California. We need to lower all of these excessive government taxes and fees so builders can actually afford to build again in California. And then we need to build at all different price points. Past that, we have to go clean up these streets. And the people that are homeless today, you know, estimates say that approximately 80% of our homeless population is on the street due to mental health issues or substance abuse issues or some combination of the two. These people must get the help that they need. That's our responsibility as a state, but it's also our responsibility to make sure that they are no longer living on our streets for their safety, for our safety. And so every single Californian has the ability and the right to walk down any street day or night and feel safe in the state of California.
Do you think that California should be a sanctuary state? And I assume that you don't. And if you don't, what do you do about immigration?
This illegal sanctuary state concept of Jerry Brown is unconstitutional. Immigration is a federal issue. It is not a state issue. So when Jerry Brown made California an illegal sanctuary state, he essentially said that people who are here in our state illegally, that are committing crimes while they are here, will now be sheltered with California taxpayers' dollars. And this is absolutely wrong. There is no income group, there is no geographic area, there is no ethnicity that wants people in their neighborhoods who are not here legally in the first place, that are committing crimes while they're here. Nobody wants these people in their state. This is the criminal that, for instance, shot Kate Steinle in the back as she was walking down the pier in San Francisco with her father. Nobody wants a seven-time felon, that has been deported 5 times being released into their communities. So as the next governor of the state of California, I will reverse the sanctuary state. I'll do it in my first 100 days in office, and we will do it directly through a special ballot initiative. At the same time, we'll also pursue this at the federal Supreme Court, because this law is unconstitutional.
But there are also millions of Californians that are undocumented in this state that are not committing crimes and that are concerned about deportation or concerned about the Trump administration. What do you say to them?
So this is where the Democrats like to confuse the issue, because unfortunately, for years, the Democrats had the ability to solve the immigration problem, but they didn't. When Obama had control of the White House, and Congress, he very easily could have passed immigration reform, but instead, he chose to ruin our healthcare system in the United States. Now, we finally have a president that is tackling immigration head-on. He has offered a deal to the Democrats that is far more generous than anything Obama ever offered, but yet the Democrats are stalling and they're trying not to accept this deal. At issue in California are two very different things. The first is the illegal sanctuary state, where we're sheltering people who are here illegally that are committing crimes while they're here. This is patently wrong, and no one agrees with this idea, so that must be reversed. Secondly, California must follow federal immigration law. And we are very hopeful, and we do believe that Washington will come up with a deal where we can actually figure out what needs to be done with the people that are here who are here illegally. Because in the end of the day, we must always follow federal immigration law, not just for the benefit and safety of our California citizens, but also for the benefit and safety of the people who are here illegally.
Sure.
These people who have come to our state illegally, from a purely, you know, humanistic standpoint, they live in the shadows. They always have to look over their shoulder. It's no way to live. They're the victims of crime at much higher rates. We must have a way where we can actually have a working immigration system for their safety, for our safety, and so we can once again respect the rule of law right here in California.
What do we do about health care? Single payer? I would imagine not your favorite.
No, well, look, single payer health care is being championed by Gavin Newsom. Single payer health care would cost $400 billion. What this means is it would bankrupt the state in the first 6 months of implementation. Now, what it means to every California citizen is you would no longer get to keep your doctor, and if you needed to go see a physician, essentially you'd have to go down to the DMV and wait in line. I mean, if government-run health care was such a great idea, why isn't the Veterans Administration taking care of the health care for the entire country? And we all know the answer, because the government can't efficiently administer health care. So what the real answer is we need to repeal and replace Obamacare. And what it must be replaced with is an interstate insurance model where insurance companies can compete across state lines for our business. When I first started investments in 1996, I also got my license as a health and life agent. So I have, through time, gotten many people health insurance plans. And prior to the Obamacare implementation, you could come and get a health insurance plan that would fit your needs and would fit your price point. After covered California and Obamacare, all of these plans went away, and now we have these high deductible plans that truly don't work for anyone. And the real crime is many people in rural California are stuck with health insurance and no doctors that will take them. So what we need to do is we need to open the doors, we need to allow more insurance companies to come to California and compete for the business. This will mean that coverages will go up and prices will go down.
So everything you've said so far are basically applauded by Republicans pretty much everywhere. You know, lower taxes, we're against Obamacare, we need to do this thing on immigration. But this state voted for Hillary Clinton by 4 million votes. We've got Democrats in every statewide office. We got Democratic supermajorities. How is that message going to work in a state that is as blue as any other state in the country?
So I have a very simple 5-point plan. It's to cut taxes, it's to get tough on crime and repeal these soft on crime laws like AB 109, Prop 57, and Prop 47. It's to fix our roads and expand our freeways without raising a dime of taxes. It's to fix our broken education system so our children once again come first and parents can send their kids to the best schools in the nation. And lastly, it's to complete our state water project. Of every single one of those points, they all poll at 60 to 80% across every California, regardless if you're Republican, Democrat, or declined state. The answer is that the next governor of California must represent the California people on the issues that matter most to Californians. And these issues are what matter most to Californians. Having a job, paying less in taxes, sending your kids to great schools, and being safe when you walk down the street, and knowing that your water is not going to be turned off. We're not going to have to do these droughts every 10 years because we have more than enough water because we actually built water storage. And this is how we take back our state of California. We actually talk to Californians about the issues that truly matter, as opposed to trying to shelter criminals who are not here legally committing crimes in our communities, or doing the single-payer health care system that will bankrupt our state in 6 months. It's actually about fixing our state and making California once again the greatest state in the nation.
So what's your strategy to do this? We saw fundraising, and it showed that you were in debt in terms of the recent numbers.
Actually, that was incorrect.
Okay.
Yes. So that was spun by some of the media. So what has happened is I'm actually not only the Republican front runner, I have more support than any other Republican in the race. I have more support than all of the rest of the Republicans combined. There's really three people in the race right now. It's Gavin Newsom, Antonio Villaraigosa, and myself.
Yeah.
And the latest polling shows that I was within 1 point of cracking into the top two. So essentially, we are right there. And in terms of fundraising, I am the largest fundraiser for the Republicans. Other than, you know, one of my opponents put in a couple million dollars out of his own pocket, we have actually raised more money from more Californians than any other Republican running for governor. And what I've also done is I've reserved over 13 million pieces of mail. So I will have more mail going out than any other Republican candidate, and it's those payments that we have that are showing up on my reports. So this is actually a huge strategic advantage for us.
Okay. So the idea is to get in the top two with one of those guys and then, see what happens?
The idea, Alex, is to get in the top one spot.
Yeah.
You know, remember, there's only one person to be governor of the state of California, yeah. So the goal is to win in June and to win in November. And the way we win is we talk to Californians about the issues that truly matter. And we just say, look, very simply, 39 of the last 40 years, California's been run by the California Democrats in the state legislature. This has given us among the nation's highest taxes. Companies, people, and jobs are fleeing our state. 1 in 5 Californians live in poverty. Our homelessness is the nation's highest, and we seem to never have enough of anything we need in California. It's about time we turn that around and take back our state. And my name's Travis Allen, and you better believe that's exactly what I'm gonna do.
Okay, so let's talk for a moment about you, about Travis Allen. Who is Travis Allen? Let's start with your childhood. Tell us a little bit about it, where you grew up, what it was like.
So I was born in San Diego, and I was raised in Chula Vista, about 5 minutes away from the border. And, you know, it's a great, great town, absolutely loved it, you know, had a great upbringing. I actually went to California public schools, and I think I got a great education. Then, you know, later on, I moved. I went up to college in Los Angeles. I went to Cal State LA, over in East LA. And sometime during college, I went over to Hawaii, because I'm a big surfer, as you might have heard. And I was having a great time in Hawaii surfing, and I thought I might go to University of Hawaii. Unfortunately, in Hawaii, they had a very special name for me, and that was Howley. And they'll tell you it means outsider, but I'll tell you it means white boy that doesn't belong in our waves. So after a while, I got kind of tired of not being back home, and I called a friend of mine, and he said he lived in Huntington Beach. And he said, look, Huntington Beach is Surf City, USA. It's got everything you could possibly want. Lots of great restaurants, lots of great people, and unlimited waves. And so in college, I thought this sounded like heaven. And sure enough, it was. And I've lived there for the last 20 years. I'm actually in the Guinness Book of World Records in Huntington Beach for surfing on the largest surfboard ever built with the most number of people on it. We got in there just a couple of years ago. So Huntington Beach has been my home for the last 2 decades. But unfortunately, as I've lived there and worked there and grown my business as a financial advisor, I've had to watch as my parents left the state and my brother left the state. My best friend's now in Texas. My other best friend even left the country. Yeah. He's in Puerto Rico.
So, now I
said, look, you know, there's something I got to be able to do because I want to stay right here.
Talk to us about your parents. Tell us a little bit about them. What did you learn from them?
My folks are, you know, I was very blessed, you know, when I grew up. So my mother is, she was a stay-at-home mom. My father's an attorney, and she was never content staying at home. So she thought, you know, my kids go to the local elementary school. Maybe I'll go join the PTA. So she joined the PTA. Then she became the PTA president. Then she saw some things on the school board she didn't like, so she got elected to the school board and became the chairman of the school board. And, you know, it might sound like a small thing, but at the time, the Chula Vista Elementary School District was the largest elementary school district in the state of California. So when I was 6 years old, I was that little blonde kid, you know, knocking on front doors saying, you know, would you vote for my mom, and putting their signs in their front yard. And that was my upbringing. She actually parlayed that to become the chairman of the California State Coastal Conservancy. She was appointed by Duke Majan and then by Wilson. And then Governor Wilson asked her to be on the California Coastal Commission, and she resisted for a long time because she thought it was too political. But finally she went on, and she was there for 2 years, and then she was fired by Gray Davis because he cleaned out all the Republicans. Yeah. So as I grew up around the dinner table, I heard a lot of political conversation. But then I left it all behind, and I started managing money for the next 20 years. And it wasn't until I saw that my parents and my family had left the state, and my clients had left the state, that maybe it was time that I actually you know, took this up myself and did what I could to fix our state.
But was your mom, was that, do you think, the thing that sparked you in at least being interested in this or thinking about this or thinking,
you know,
this is a possibility?
I think it was because, you know, those conversations we'd have around the dinner table, we talked about what the role of elected officials are, you know, in any community. And the real role of an elected official is not to be, you know, to have the nicest seat at the table or anything like that. That's all nonsense. The role of the elected official is to do the very best for the people that you represent. And this was the problem that I see in California, is the people that have been running the state, you know, Jerry Brown and his family have run the state for 24 of the last 50 years, and you see the shape of the state. And so I think that, you know, when people see that, they say, look, my neighborhood's gone downhill. What's the answer? The answer is to get involved and to change it.
So talk to us about the rest of your family.
So my brother works for Raytheon. And, you know, he used to be here in California, and a lot of those jobs used to be here in California. Unfortunately, those jobs are now in Arizona. So he lives in Tucson, Arizona with his family. And that's my entire family. They've all left the state.
And you're married with kids?
I am married. Yeah. So I my mother, actually, funny you bring up my mom, never thought I might get married, but I met the greatest girl. I really waited, you know, for the right one. And back in 2016, I got married. And just a wonderful, wonderful person inside and out. And I'm a pretty good negotiator. So when I got married, I picked up in the deal an 8-year-old daughter, Charlotte, and she is incredible. And since we've actually added to our family, we have a 2-month-old baby girl, Caroline.
Congratulations.
And, yeah, it's fantastic. My wife even convinced me to get a dog. So we really are a, you know, the regular California family. But now, I want my daughters to grow up right here in California. I want them to surf the same waves that I do, and I want them to go to public school just like I did.
I mean, has that changed your outlook? It sounds like you spent much of your life as a bachelor, and now you've got like a few kids in a couple of years, you know?
Yeah.
How is that changing your perception when it comes to politics?
Well, you know, it kind of brings it all home. I mean, it's not just now that these are things that I've seen that happened to my family. Now I have my own family. And truly, I want to raise my family right here in California. I mean, this really is the greatest state in the nation. And we have everything here you could ever want. You know, we have the beaches, we have the mountains, we have the agriculture, we have all the great stuff in the world. But this state should really be the best state in the nation. And when I take a look at my family and my daughters, I want them to be raised right here in California. And I want them to have everything that I had. And I don't want them to have to worry if they're going to walk down a street that there might be, you know, human waste because they're in the middle of Gavin Newsom, San Francisco. I want them to be raised in the greatest state in the nation. That's exactly why I'm running.
I'm glad we're now back to being the greatest state in the nation.
That's right.
We've gone back and forth in this interview. Last two questions that I've asked everybody. Is there anything nice you want to say about somebody else that's running or any of your opponents?
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I think that there's a number of people running to be governor of the state of California. And I think that they're all running for the wrong reasons, and they're running in the wrong direction. You take a look at Gavin Newsom and Antonio Villaraigosa, and you look at their legacies, you look at their history. The legacy in San Francisco and Los Angeles is abysmal. I mean, those cities have gone downhill dramatically with these exploding homeless populations. Crime has risen by over 15.4% statewide in the last 3 years due to laws championed by Gavin Newsom. And so, you know, really, this race is very simple. If Californians believe that they deserve better, if they believe that they should no longer have to exist in a state and live in a state where they're worried that crime is rising, their kids are going to bad schools, they don't have enough water, and homelessness and poverty is out of control, well then, that's 8 more years of Jerry Brown. Or we have a dramatic chance to turn this entire state around, and that's why I'm running.
So that was the nice thing about the opponent?
Okay. I got to tell you, that's about as nice as we can get, because you take a look at the rest of the things that Gavin and Antonio have done, and unfortunately, they have not succeeded. And you take a look at what Jerry Brown has done, and he's an abject legacy of failure. He never built his train to nowhere. The Delta tunnels will never get built, and they're not the right answer for water in California. And all that these people have done is take the state from what used to be a phenomenal state, and now, you know, it's a state of scarcity. It's a state where, you know, Jerry Brown tells us there's never enough and that there's rising crime. And you know, you take a look at the change in the nation, and we just had the State of the Union a couple nights ago, and you see that the country is now on a dramatically different path. I want California to experience that amazing economic boom. I want every Californian to know that this is a state of opportunity.
Last question, what's the biggest misconception about you?
Oh gosh, I would have to say that if anyone has taken a look at my candidacy, I think that everyone understands that I am in this with my whole heart. I am in this because I was born and raised right here in the state, and I believe that a Republican can be the next governor of the state of California. And I would say the biggest misconception is many people believe that a Republican can never be elected again as governor of the state of California. And for this, I would point out a very simple fact. In 2014, Jerry Brown was elected with 4.3 million votes to become governor. In 2016, Donald Trump got 4.4 million votes in California. So literally, all that this means is if we just turn out the Trump voters, we will be the next governor of the state of California, and that's exactly what we're gonna do.
Well, yeah, although you assume that the same number of people will be voting in the...
And Alex, we're actually hoping for a lot more, because you take a look at the issues confronting California, and I think these are so broad, they're so bipartisan.
These midterms are probably gonna have a big turnout.
Yes.
Thank you very much for the time. We appreciate you sharing your views, and I think people will get a lot more of a sense of what you're about if they took the time to listen to this, and I really appreciate it. Travis Allen, a Republican assemblyman from Huntington Beach, we thank him for joining us here to talk about Allen and the race as a whole, is Dan Schnur from USC. Dan, thanks for being here.
Alex, thank you for having me.
So where does Travis Allen fit into the race as a whole?
So Travis Allen isn't just a committed and principled conservative. He's a committed and principled populist Trump conservative. And in many states, that's an almost certain ticket to victory. In deep blue California, it's a much more uphill fight. That's not to say that it can't be done, but as long as there are two Republicans rather than one in the race, it becomes a much more difficult challenge for either Allen or Cox to make it to the runoff with just one, that that Republican would be assured of a spot in November.
And, you know, the Allen people are frustrated that Cox is still in the race. Cox has $200 million, so there's really, money's not an issue for him. He's already pumped in millions of dollars of his own money. Where does Allen separate himself from Cox, and where can he knock him out, sort of?
Well, both Cox and Allen are conservative, but John Cox is much more of a traditional conservative, a Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney, John McCain, George Bush conservative. As I mentioned a moment ago, Travis Allen is a fire-breathing, principled, populist Donald Trump Republican. And while the odds are against him in this race, a candidate like that has a better chance of inspiring his base in order to move forward. That said, it is a steep uphill race for any Republican, particularly a conservative Republican in California in 2018. I wonder if, even if Travis Allen falls short in this governor's race, his victory may be in becoming the acknowledged leading conservative voice in the nation's largest country. That can't be bad for a political future in 2020 and beyond.
And the nation's largest state, yes.
Thank you.
And one thing that the Allen people are hoping for is that maybe there's going to be a Trump backlash in certain parts of the country because all Republicans are in charge in Washington. But in California, Democrats are in charge of everything, and there's real frustration, especially in the sanctuary state issue, the homeless issue. There are issues that are driving the Republican base to try to get the Democrats out.
Oh, there's no question about it. And there is already some resistance to that, anti-Trump resistance. We've seen it in many communities in Orange County and in northern San Diego County, particularly on the sanctuary cities issue. The challenge for Allen or for any Republican is that the Republican Party population in this state is so much smaller than it once was. His challenge and his goal is to reach out beyond that anti-resistance to a broader swath of the electorate. He may pull that off. More likely, as I said a moment ago, he becomes the leading conservative voice in the state of California now and for some time to come.
Well, I want to give his supporters credit because they are tremendous in social media at putting his message out. Or at least I've seen that when I've reported on Travis Allen before, much more so than any of the other candidates. And I hope that they enjoyed listening to this and our conversation with you, Dan. Thank you so much. And our thanks to Travis Allen for joining us as well. Of course, you can listen to all the candidates. Our podcast is called The Issue Is. We're in iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. Please leave us a rating, a nice review. It's really going to help us reach more people. And for those Travis Allen folks, that's the way to get this podcast in front of more people. Let me know what you think. I'm in social media at Alex Michelson. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you join us next time.